What I'd like to do right now is introduce to you somebody that I highly love and respect, a man who was at the bottom of a pit at one time in his life. For those of you who have never seen our guest pastor today, and he probably coined the saying, if you're given lemons, make lemonade. He made a lot more than lemonade. He gave his life for this country to save a lot of our wounded warriors. He started a wounded warriors program that's gone nationwide, and many others have come after that for over 20 years now. And he's helped thousands and thousands of soldiers to come home and know that they are loved, they do have a useful life, and to believe in themselves. I've had the honor to be with twice. I guess I flunked the first time, so he drafted me back in the second time to witness this, and I did witness healing going on. And Dave has been such a wonderful, positive inspiration for me in my life, Dave, and I'm honored to know you and call you my brother. So right now, I'd like to bring Pastor Dave up forward to give us our sermon.
Good morning. Woo, I like that. Y'all just look awesome today. What a great time to celebrate with First Baptist in Westcliff. Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. I have a very Merry Christmas. I want you to meet my wife, Beth Ann. Would you welcome her today? She and I have been married now, coming up on how long?
Month and a half.
You see what's going to happen when it's a year, if I can't remember. I'll have one less ear. That's funny. Some of you don't get it. I have an artificial ear, and because the other one was blown off. People say to me, why do you keep going back to Vietnam? I'm looking for my ear. It's somewhere over there. But we're happy, 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 happy to be here. And yes, Eric, you are a very special guest every time we have our programs out there. I love the thing I got to do with the men of the community, especially sponsored by First Baptist here up on the side of the mountain. Boy, that was a memorable time. A lot of snow. I thought, oh, Lord, because I don't walk real good. I was in Iraq in 2010. And I jumped out of a helicopter and I hit wrong and I shattered 6 vertebrae and was paralyzed for 2 years. Partially paralyzed, my leg didn't work, and I had to, it's just a long story, so I can't stand long, can't walk very good, but I thought, I never will get through all that snow for that men's thing, but boy, it was worth every bit of the effort, and I want all the guys here that were up there to know it's great to see you again. Glad to be back with you. I have a great love for First Baptist Church. I've missed Pastor. I love him so much. We're going to keep praying for him. Amen. We're going to believe God to heal and restore his health. But Beth Ann and I are just thrilled to be here. I don't want to put her on the spot too much because she's not used to this kind of lifestyle, being in front of people. But ask her if she'd share a little bit of her story. I married a Gold Star wife, and she lost her husband in combat and war. And kind of a hero to me, but a husband to her. I want her to tell you a little bit of his story. Are you in for that? Take it away, baby.
Well, I don't know if it's so much his story anymore. It's my story.
Your story, amen.
So he was called to go on a mission overseas, and about 18 years ago, he flew the U-2 spy plane. Anybody familiar with that aircraft? They fly 70,000 feet, about, 13, 16 miles in the air. So you have a nice little view of the horizon of the earth and how beautiful it is when you're just up there. You just get lost in the clouds. You get lost in the horizon. And you're with God that whole time. I mean, how much closer can you get to God than being in the skies with him? So anyway, that fatal day, he was on his way back to the base I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And the plane broke apart. The shaft that connected the engine to the cockpit sheared, which was a no-fail part. And he couldn't do anything to save his life. He tried to save the plane, and that's what they're taught to do, is to try to save the aircraft. Like the ship, the captain goes down with the boat. This time, it was him going down with the plane. On this particular mission, which it was a successful mission after all, he completed what the intel wanted him to do, and he actually saved the lives of the troops on the ground from an impending invasion. So we're thankful for that. A couple of months later, somebody standing at my door with an MP3 player in their hand. In that MP3 player was a CD, and I opened it up to listen to it, and it was God of Wonders. In the investigation report, there was writing stating that there was music bleeding over the intel line, and that's what he was listening to, God of Wonders, on his final flight. So we know where he is. So I just wanted to share with you this morning one of the songs that we sang. The verses was fall on your knees. I can't think of a better time to say fall on your knees. If this is a season of hurt for you, a season of trials for you, whether you're grieving for a loss of a loved one in your family or somebody who just got taken away out of, for some reason or another, through drugs or alcohol, it doesn't matter. God is there. Fall on your knees. Ask him to come into your life. That's what I did. If I didn't have God, I wouldn't be here today. He is my message of hope. And there is hope for everyone in this room, everyone in this community, and beyond. There is hope for everyone. 18 years standing in the wings waiting for somebody to come into my life. I learned that out of contentment. You need to be content with your situation no matter where you are, no matter how hard it is, no matter how much you're struggling. Just know that God is with you and he's watching over you. And there is a timing for everything. 18 years seems like a long time. But you know what? In the end, I look back at it and I prayed that God would give me his best, and he did. He gave me Dave. So please, just take that time to be with God. Be joyful. Fall on your knees. Call him into your life. He's the one that gives you joy, not your circumstances.
Well said, man. Thank you, babe. Not bad, huh? That's my girl. I'm really not emotional. I don't want you to get the wrong impression. I'm allergic to the carpet, and makes my eyes water up pretty bad. But thanks, Beth. That was sweet. Hey, I brought some things that helps our operation out here at the ranch. I take no royalties or any. No money's come to us out of this. We brought some books. I want to mention them real quick. Forged in Fire was the first place I brought this book, My Last Visit, the first time I had it. And it comes in a beautiful two book package. One is called Consuming Fire, which is companion book that helps draw out the best of Forged in Fire, which deals with the fact that I came back from a war really messed up, and I didn't know what messed up was. They didn't even know what to call it. And how I put my family through living hell. I mean, it was very difficult trying to find myself. My family couldn't find me either. And how God brought us. And look, here's the point. If your family is struggling, this book can be a huge example of how God can take all the negatives of disappointment, distraction, discouragement, disfigurement. Now, I look pretty good now because I got a nose. But some of you that knew me 5 years ago know I didn't have a nose. Isn't it cute? It's a boy. I'm so proud of it. They made it for me at Brooke Army Medical Center, and they made me a nose and eyelids. And I don't wear glasses because I can't see you. I wear glasses so you can't see me. I don't want you to see my right eye because it's a mess. But God will take that book and give you some seriously good healing out of it. I really believe it. Another book, and I'll do this quickly, is called War and Recovery, and it's short stories from the battlefield that's applicable to the mission field of your life. To put it simply, I went to war, got hurt, and came home with a purple heart. You went to divorce court and came home with a broken heart and a broken washer, and the ex got the dryer, and it worked, because life's not fair. Am I right? Life is not fair. This book will help you in a huge way. Another one called Scarred Autobiography. These are great Christmas gifts. If you don't have these, if you get them for yourself. If you got them, get some for your friends. Scarred is the details my work with Department of Defense today. Matter of fact, I just scheduled another tour with DOD, with Special Operations Command Pacific, out of Pearl Harbor. And I continue to work with the military all over the world, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, UAE, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Bosnia, Kosovo, South Africa, North Korea. Wherever they send me, it's not because I'm good looking, although it's getting better. It's not because of my mighty military strength, I have to sit down because I can't stand long. It's not because of my academic achievements, I was in the top 10% of the lower one-third of my class. I majored in math, and I found out 5 out of 4 people don't understand fractions. And if you didn't understand that, you were in my class. So hang in here with me. This book is an amazing book. Another one called Magic Fountain. It's a story about 3 old hags in their search for riches and what they find when they come across the king's son. It's an amazing analogy. I've written it in the same style of C.S. Lewis. All the graphics are hand-drawn. There's nothing computer-generated in the book at all. It's all hand-drawn. It becomes a family heirloom. And the secret of the book is when you read it, you find out which of the 3 hags you are. And their names are Hag Number 1, Hag Number 2, and Hag Number 3. And then lastly, in the patriotic spirit of our operation out at Eagle Summer Ranch, we believe in showing our colors. We have the most unique flags. One is, this is for our special responders, which we got right on front row, front and center. Would you stand up? Give him a super welcome this morning. Would you do that? One of our own. I salute you, buddy. This is in honor of you. In fact, I want to give you that flag today as my gift. That's to your family. This is a very special flag. It represents the blue line for our law enforcement, red line for our first responders and fire. And matter of fact, you can just, if you don't mind, when we go down, just take that to him. And then we have one more flag in honor of our military. It's the same flag with the green stripe on it. And our military is our big focus, and our first responders are also our big focus at Eagle Summer Ranch. We now have about equal 50-50 for first responders and military. And Bo Wood is one of our favorite new sons out there, and we're very happy to have him participating in our program now. And Bo gets prayed for by this church because y'all love him. You love this guy, and he's never alone. And the struggles and battles he's fought, he doesn't have to fight them alone. We're going to stand by him. And Eagle Summer Ranch and all of our staff just kind of adopted him. And we love you, Bo. Hang in there, champ. Whew. This carpet's going to have to go. There's so much I want to say and still get you out before 12, but midnight's a long way, so I got plenty of time. That's pretty sick, isn't it? I have a scripture I want to read for you. So if you have your iPhones, turn with me. That's a joke. It's a good one. Psalm 84, and I'm going to read 3 verses, verse 4, 5, or first 5, 6, and 7. Psalm 84, verse 5. 6 and 7. By the way, on those product back there, if you choose to buy those, you're welcome to use your credit card too. And if it's cash, you have to sign the back of it. No, I'm kidding. My jokes are sad. Are you ready? Psalm 84, verse 5. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them. Verse 6. Who passing through the valley of Baca make it a well. The rain also filleth the pools. Verse 7. They go from strength to strength. Every one of them in Zion appeareth before God. This is a powerful, powerful three scriptures that have had a huge impact in my career and in my lifetime. And this morning, as I was up really early, about 4 o'clock this morning, studying the Word, I try to give God about 4 to 5 hours of my best time of thinking every day of my life, every day. So I was up early again, and the Lord just started putting this scripture in my heart. And I got to thinking about, blessed is the man whose strength is in thee. That doesn't need a whole lot of explanation, does it? I can expound on that with just have common sense, my friend. If your strength is in God, you're blessed. Amen? And so that doesn't take a lot of explanation, but blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them. What does that mean, in whose heart are the ways of them? You know what the word ways kind of breaks down to be? Highways. In the heart, it's a highway. Now, I grew up, like probably some of you, if you grew up in a Christian home, straight is the way and narrow is the gate and few there'll be that enter in, and you probably won't make it, Dave. Got a little Catholic chant to it there, and it didn't seem like I was going to make it. I grew up not believing that I could make it. I was raised in a Christian home. I was raised by a mom that when I was born, she could not raise me. My birth almost killed her, so I was raised by a surrogate mother from Matamoros, Mexico, Maria Rubio. My first language was Spanish. I didn't learn English till I was 6 years old. Then they told me I was not a Mexican. Blew my Hispanic mind. And life, I began life finding out I wasn't the man I thought I was. See, in my life, like your life, we are hit with things that we're not prepared for so often. And it challenges us to question not only God, but even the existence of God. Challenge us to question ourselves. I still have a bad habit of questioning myself. You'll find when I speak, I'm very vulnerable because I don't know how to hide anything. Honestly, folks, you'll discover that even this morning, I believe you'll discover that I don't know how to mask anything. I found out I wasn't the man I thought I was as a child. I found out I wasn't the man I thought I was when I went in the military and they put me in a special operations group of the U.S. Navy called Brownwater Black Beret. I was assigned to SEAL Team 1. Has the hardest training I'd ever been through in my life. My SEER training, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape, S-E-R-E, some of the most difficult training I'd ever faced. And a week without food, learning how to scrounge for anything you could eat, and living like an animal in a jungle, alone, finding my way to certain checkpoints. It was very difficult. I wasn't the man I thought I was. I needed training, I needed help, I needed people to show me the way. And I succeeded, I won the internal battle of thinking I couldn't succeed, but I did, only to discover that the reality of my training and the reality of war could never be reconciled. The reality of war was you don't get over it. You get through your training, you get over it. You don't get over war. And on July the 26th, 1969, for all you teenagers, that's right after the War of 1812. I knew what you were thinking. Got a grin out of her. Yep, that was a big day in my life. That's the day a grenade blew 6 inches from my right ear. That's why everything not covered was blown off to the bone. White phosphorus burns at 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It destroyed my image. If it's covered, it was second degree from my clothing, but the blast, my head actually shattered this part of my face from being blown off completely, and it granulated in. That is, the skin was enough of it left, barely enough left to not have to have grafting. But if it's not covered, it was to the bone. They had to graft my entire face, back, chest, arms. All the skin that was blown up, 60 pounds of my flesh went up in smoke instantly. Went blind in my eye, deaf in my ear. I got my vision back. I can see again. I'm a right eye. During COVID, they put me on the table and operated on my right eye, and they cut off all the scar tissue. I got off the table with 20/20 vision. What do you think of that? Give the Lord a clap over it. That's awesome. So COVID has a pleasant memory, but it was a very unpleasant memory when I lost my wife and my sweet Brenda died that day on February 26th. And I look back and I think, I'm not the man I thought I was. I lost it. I didn't know what to do. I was in a world of hurt. Those of you who lost a spouse know what I mean. I married a woman, lost a spouse. She knows that feeling. And I thought there was no future, no tomorrow. I became very dark, but I couldn't live like that. And I knew it, and I asked God, please give me back my joy. We've been talking about, don't let anybody take your joy. I like that. That's good on the piano there, sir. Well done. Don't lose your joy. One of my employees, one of my best employees ever, been with me 33 years, told me about 30 years ago, he could see we were going through a struggle in the ministry, trying to financially put together a big program that was going to be very challenging in television ministry. And he could see that I was getting into a state of mind of negativity. He said, Dave, no matter what, don't lose your joy. I never forgot him saying that. And to this day, I remember it. I'm blessed because I have God in my life, but I also want you to know there's a highway to heaven, and don't get off that highway. Don't get onto that narrow path. You see, to the unbeliever, the Christian doesn't have any fun. No sex, no drugs, no alcohol, all that blah, blah, blah. They think the Christian doesn't have fun. Well, when they're dying with AIDS and cancers from everything they put in their body that destroys everything from the liver to the lungs, and they think we're not having fun, I say, what are you doing for a good time? How's it paying off for you to be an unbeliever? I'd rather be a believer and forfeit a few sexual and lustful and deeds of the flesh. I'd rather lose some of that than lose my life. Come on, give me a little encouragement here. I can't afford not to serve Jesus. I'd rather tithe and be blessed than not tithe and be cursed. Think of it. So my rule is follow God and be happy. Don't worry, be happy. Remember that song? Got to be a Jamaican to appreciate that. So in the highway, it's a heaven. In the heart, it's a highway to heaven. But to the world, it looks straight and narrow. I'm happy to tell you, I've lived long enough to prove for myself that serving Christ is the best decision I've ever made in my entire existence on this planet. Think of that. Then it goes to the next verse. Passing through the Valley of Baca, B-A-C-A. There's another spelling for that in the modern day. It's called B-A-K-K-A or B-A-K-K-A-H, Baca. And if you remember back in the days of President Carter and President Reagan, there were hostages held in Iran. And we tried to send over a special ops group that failed in the desert. The planes crashed, and it was a total disaster. That place was known as the Baca Valley. Terry Waite, that very famous reporter, I don't know, reporter, journalist, whatever, is a well-remembered name in all this conflab of these hostages held. That today, that example from that era, and before 1980, that and during 1980s when Reagan was in, that era of hostage taking is why Hamas took hostages of the Israelis, because they could interact with other countries that supported them by saying, we have support of other countries and we have your hostages. If you want to see your hostages, it's not fair to make innocent people pay like that. And it's a disaster. I was supposed to be in Israel. I was in Vietnam for several weeks and came out of Vietnam because I have a large industry there in education. And I went to Zurich, Switzerland, straight from Vietnam, and I was supposed to go to the IDF and train them in the same thing I do for Department of Defense. And it was the 7th of October. I'm glad that God spoke to me, don't go. Don't go. I had this, kind of like Paul said, we were forbidden of God to go to Asia. I was forbidden of God to go to Israel. And I called ahead, and I told the IDF I'm going to postpone till after first of the year. They were good with it. And God spared me from being in the middle of something I couldn't do anything about. And so I'm trying to give you an idea that passing through the Valley of Baca, the Baca Valley, it has a history. Let me show you the history of it. David writes about it, King David, in the Psalm. The Baca Valley is a negative place. Jesus referred to the Valley of Gehenna out of the word Hinnom, Gehenna, Gehenna. Hinnom was way back when the children of Israel would sacrifice their babies. The Bible called it pass them through the fire. That was a horrible place. Jesus referred to it as the place where the fire is not quenched and the worm doth not, referring to Gehenna as a place called hell. That's where all those lepers went and were banished to Gehenna. This is a sad place. And I'm just getting started if I want to spend more time on it, but I don't. So what I'm trying to tell you is Baca has a name translation from the original. You know what it is? Weeping, sorrow. So now listen to what I'm going to read for you. Blessed is the man whose strength is in God, who in his heart, it's a highway to heaven, but it passes through the valley of weeping and sorrow. He makes it a place of springs and digs a well. There's a commercial about American Express. Don't leave home without it. Don't leave home without your American Express card. I'm saying to the believer, passing through the valley of sorrow, get a shovel and don't leave home without it. Because along the way, you're going to pass through somebody's valley of sorrow and you can dig a well. And they can drink from the water of hope again because you were there and you gave something up. Someone cared enough to dig a well and plowed the snow for you to be here so we could be here today in the parking lot clean. That's great. Eric, whoever it is, tell them I said thanks. I believe in reaching out. See, we have these warriors come to the Eagle Summit Ranch, been thousands. We quit counting at 6,000 some about 2 years ago. We just quit counting because numbers were not that important. But my point is they've never paid a penny to come. No one's ever paid a dollar to come through Eagle Summit Ranch. They don't give a dime. And I don't want their money. I want them. I want their soul to be blessed because my soul is blessed when their soul is blessed. And so that's why we have the product. It helps pay for the cost of operating. It costs me $30,000 every week I do out there to bring them in because we pay round-trip airfare for everybody that flies in, mom and all the babies for family camp. Everything we do is paid for in full. I want to be known as a well digger. But well diggers don't necessarily dress that well. I remember when I bought my property in Texas. This goes back 54 years ago, about 54 years ago. And I remember we had a travel trailer. We pulled out in the middle of this property. There was no electricity, no water, nothing. 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 We had to have a little generator run electric, keep batteries up in the little Airstream trailer we had until I got a pole set from the electric company. So we got a pole. And then I could say, well, I can run a well and have a pump. So I called a well digger. And I looked under wells, and the first one was A, all red, well digging. And this is the conversation. I'm telling you the truth. This is how it went. Ring, ring, ring. He answered, what? I said, excuse me? What? I said, I'm calling for Mr. Allred. Yes. Is this Mr. Allred? Yes. I said, well, I need a well. Where? 10 Mile Bridge Road, 9430. When? Now? Okay, click. I am not exaggerating. That was the conversation. So my wife said, did you get a well ordered? I said, I think so. But I don't. She said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to get on the four-wheeler. I'm going to go up to the blacktop road, and I'm going to sit there and wait. She said, how long? I said, I don't know. She said, when? I said, now. She said, why? I said, because. And I'm picking up on his one-word sentences. So I go up, and I'm sitting on the four-wheeler. 4 hours later, here comes this old white Ford pickup with a big A-frame on the back and a dangling thing that spins around, digs holes. And he bounced onto my property, and buckets fell off the side. He rolled to a stop because he didn't have any brakes. And I pulled up beside this old truck, and on the side, faded in pink from, I'm sure, red many years before. You could barely read it, all red. Well digging, sir, I thought Jed Clampett has come to dig me a well. I said, it gets funnier. I said, are you Mr. Clampett?
Yes.
And he said, tell me, where do you want the well? I grabbed my heart and stepped back and said, Elizabeth, girl, it's a big one. I'm going to have a heart. He said, what's the matter? I said, well, you shocked me. You spoke a whole sentence. And he said, where do you want the well? I said, I don't know. Get your stick out, that thing you walk around with and point at the water in the ground or something. I don't know what to tell him. He said, well, where are you going to build the house? I said, over there. He said, why don't you put the well near the house? Oh, I said, I didn't think of that. He said, I can see. I felt like the idiot, and he's the one with one-word sentences. So he started digging a well, and that first leg of pipe, I think it's 8 or 10 feet, it was underneath the truck. He had pipes everywhere on that truck, underneath the truck, on the side of it, on top of it. And you got to hear this. It was so dry. That old caliche rock in Texas was popping white smoke up as he's trying. I thought, man, it's so dry here. Our dogs, our trees fight over dogs, you know. And and our catfish have ticks. And so I'm thinking, he's not going to hit water. Pretty soon, that thing sunk down. Now he's putting on another stem, they call it, and another stem. At 125 feet, he hit the sweetest water of the third level of all rivers called the Trinity River. He handed me a cup of water, a tin cup. That water was so cold, it made that tin cup sweat. A hot July day, I'm drinking the best water. 50 years later, I'm still drinking from that well. 50 years later, that well's never failed. 50 years later, that water is still the sweetest water I've ever drank from a well in my life. What I'm trying to tell you is, there's a water that flows from the throne of God. Beth Ann talked about it. She talked about it. She said, fall on your knees. Get your joy back. Don't let the circumstances of your life today destroy your hope and take your joy away. Drink from the water of life. Jesus said, come, ye that are thirsty, drink of this water. Ye that have no money, buy. How do you buy without money? Faith, believe, hope. That's how you buy. That's how you get that water. And so I say to you today, dig a well. I looked at that old guy in that old truck. I had to calm him. I said, you know something, man, this water's good. And by the way, that's a good-looking truck you got there. And those old overalls that had that smell of dried and nasty mud on them, I said, sir, I don't know who your uniform service is, but they got some nice uniform. And I don't know what that fragrance is, but, man, it smells like English leather, in this case maybe Jewish leather. I know what I tell you. I just comment. You know, so what I'm trying to tell you? To the thirsty, they don't care if you're reverend, doctrine, Mr., Mrs. You give them water and they'll fall on their knees in gratitude. A thirsty man's looking for a drink of water. Every one of us in this room can be well diggers. You don't have to have a piece of paper on the wall that calls you Dr. So-and-so. My wife is a doctor and I'm very proud of her. But in private, I won't call her Dr. Beth Ann. In public, she's Dr. Beth Ann. But to me, she's my lover, my sweetheart, my wife. You see, if you can give hope to somebody like she's given to me, titles aren't what's important. It's what you deliver. It's the hope we give to a world that's dying hopelessly. Am I making any sense? I hope you're following my train of thought here. I'm not the best. I don't even know if I'm a good preacher, but I want to communicate it. So let me move forward on this. As a well digger, verse 7 says, they go from strength to strength. Let's put well to well. Well diggers go from well to well. Whose well do they go to? Someone that dug a well for them. Who's your well digger? Do you remember the person that gave you that first drink of water, that first hope? I remember the guy that gave me my first hope. His name was Audrey Holder, a young preacher. When he got through preaching, I was 16 years old, he was 18. When he got through preaching that message, I gave my heart to Christ. Understand, I did that at 5 years old, but I didn't know what it meant. I just didn't understand. But at 16, 11 years later, I figured it out, and I recommitted my life and dedicated my life to that first commitment. How does a five-year-old know what sin is? I didn't know. But boy, at 16, I figured it out. That's when I found out about girls. I had to do a lot of repenting. And so I found out that Christ is the answer. Christ is the answer. And I've never let go of him since, and I never will. I've come too far to look back now. Amen? And so I go to Vietnam, and this grenade blows up in my face. What grenade's blown up in your face? Sickness? Divorce? Death? What's been your grenade? Everybody has a grenade. You hear me? Everybody has that day of confrontation with the unexpected, the unknown, and the unbearable. And I jumped off my riverboat, into the water and discovered that that white phosphorus that was consuming me burns in water. Water cannot extinguish it. Any of you with military experience know I'm telling the truth. I swam across that river. My skin was all around me. I tell people I was beside myself. That's pretty good. Do you like that one? I got a better one. I needed to pull myself together. I like that one even better. But when I saw the damage, I could look down. I say it's my heart, but I could see the glistening of something inside me beating, moving. And with every shift of that stuff, blood would spray out like a flag out of a lacerated artery. I was bleeding to death, burning to death, or I could drown. So it was my choice how I want to go, or all the above. But God had a plan for my life that included sitting on a stool on a platform at Westcliff First Baptist. You're not here by accident any more than I am. God wanted us to be together in this divine rendezvous. Maybe my words can give you hope. Maybe you can take these words and give somebody else hope, fulfilling 2 Corinthians, where Paul wrote in verse 1, chapter 1, 2 Corinthians, comfort those that are hurting with the comfort you're comforted with. We pass on the water that's given. Dig a well for somebody today. I got to be thoughtful of time. How are we doing? So far, so good. Well, there we go. I'm gonna be thoughtful of your time because I know some of you want to have your Christmas dinner maybe today. I don't know. If I talk too long, your roast will become a burnt offering. Helicopter picked me up and flew me to Saigon. Actually, one stop before that I'm not going to get into. It was an emergency stop, and then to Saigon. Then they put me on a big jet, flew me to Japan, and here's where I want to share this remarkable experience, because this time of year, suicide among our military and most of all suicide among our veterans skyrockets. There's a lot of veterans in this room, and I'm going to give you some hope today, but you need to hear me. You need to listen. Everybody in this room needs to listen to me, because not one person in this room is not vulnerable to those dark moments. And sometimes in the darkness, we make the wrong decision. When I got to Japan, I asked for a mirror, and it was the wrong thing to do. And they brought one, and that was the wrong thing to do. And when they brought the mirror, I looked up in the glass, and I saw what was left. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And I couldn't deal with it, because the last thing I promised my little teenage wife was that I'd be back without a scar. She said, are you coming back? I said, I'll come back without a scar. We had the highest KIA, killed in action per capita, but you couldn't publish that report, because if they don't get your body, even though they know you're KIA, you're MIA till they get your body. And most of the guys that were killed in our team went down with a boat, and their bodies were never retrieved, so they're listed MIA. And when I said I'll be back without a scar, I felt a chill up my spine. I knew I misprophesied, let's put it that way. I said something I knew couldn't happen. And I walked away wondering what would happen if I did lose my life or if I was drastically injured. It was the first clue of what was yet to come. So that day when the grenade blew, I wasn't the man I thought I was. Then I look in the mirror in Japan. I'm not the man I thought I was. I saw this monster looking at me with this side of my face swollen. Everything over here was charred. That you could break it off. It was charcoal. It was charcoal. They broke off chunks of me that were just charcoal. And I saw that, and I didn't just see the disfigurement. I saw a broken promise, and I didn't deal with it right. They walked away in the mirror. They walked away with my last vestige of hope. And I did something terrible. And I want you young people to hear me. Suicide is no solution, kid. Don't ever give suicide a second thought. That's deadly. The second thought will kill you. I didn't have a gun or a knife, but I couldn't go home that way. I knew that if I lived by any chance, people would see what was left, and I couldn't take the risk on survival. And I knew they wouldn't open the casket on the monster I saw that day. And I did a terrible thing. I didn't have a gun or knife, so I pulled the tube out that was keeping me alive. And I laid my head back and I waited to die. I was at the end. It's still haunts me at night. I laid my head back, way to die, and I got hungry. I got hungry. That's not good timing. Don't get hungry when you're killing yourself. That means you want to live. I got hungry. I pulled the wrong tube. I pulled out lunch. You can die that way, but it's going to take a long time. That was my lunch dripping on the floor, not my life. Oh, Lord, I felt like an idiot. Then the doctors came up and realized what I tried to do. They put new orifices in my body I didn't start with, I'll tell you that. They were so mad at me, called me bad names, sent me home to punish me. They said I'd die on the plane. They took my last will and testament. And I fooled them. I lived because God had a plan for my life. You're in this room because God has a plan for your life. Don't destroy what He's prepared for you. Don't deny yourself the water of life that flows from the throne of God today. If you're not walking with Jesus, don't feel like you're a loser. Today you can be the biggest winner in all of Westcliff, in all of Colorado and America. You can make that decision to follow Christ, and it's something that's between you and Him. I can't make that decision for you. But I can tell you this, best decision I ever made. They landed me at Lackland Air Force Base and put me at Brooke Army Medical Center, flew me over by helicopter. I got pictures of all this if you ever want to look at it. I'll go back by that table, or if there's not enough room, I'll find a chair somewhere in the back of the sanctuary here if you want to see any of these pictures. The helicopter ride from the airport. The picture of me in the tank they put me in called the Hubble tank. I call it debridement, but debridement may be the more correct word for it. We call it debridement. And they put me in that tank of water and splashed the water on my charcoal body and then proceeded to dismember and take off all the dead skin and flesh that was on me, because if they don't get it off, you die of gangrene, it rots. Oh, it's hell on earth. And I seldom ever tell the story, but what about this point I start smelling my own boiling blood and I can smell my skin burn. It gets too real, and it's a scab that I keep pulling off before it heals, because I've done this for 55 years, and it hurts as much today as the first time I ever shared this story. But God gave me a mandate to prove that His grace is bigger than our hurt. His healing is bigger than our hurt in the worst way, emotionally and physically both. I'm not here because I'm tough. I already proved that to you. This isn't a tough guy talking to you. You can tell I'm a crybaby. And I went a year without tears, and I'll close by telling you this story. I was in the hospital for a year and 2 months, and the first 13 operations, I've had 62 surgeries. They're trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and I gave up on the last two. They want two more, and I said, nah. Not in Nomos, not now. If I do the other two, I don't know, I will. But in that first 14 months and 13 surgeries, I was living in a place that was so horrible. Everybody that came into that hospital either wished they could die or did die. There was no one there that wanted to be there. We were all mutilated. It's Brooke Army Medical Center. It's Ward 14A. It's where they put you to die. 13 of us were put in a room to die. They called it death row, mockingly. And all 13 of us were in there, and 12 died. I'm the only one that lived. And the first day, and I don't remember exactly how long I was in the ICU, which I didn't know what that meant until they gave me the robe. It doesn't come together. It's the ICU. I call it the Army draft. Both are correct, I guess. But they had me sitting up for the first time, and I had been in bed for about 4 months. And when they got me up, my backside just couldn't sit very well because there was the muscle tissue. So it was just atrophied so badly, the bones in my hip just hurt to sit. And I was in misery, but they had to keep my hands above my head on this little adjustable table. You need to get this picture because it's really amazing. My hands are raised. I'm in pain. I feel like God's abandoned me. I've gone 8 months in the war without a tear. From the second week that I was in Vietnam, I had a body count, and it was so devastating. I had to defend my emotions by suppressing them. I wouldn't allow them ever to respond again. 8 months of that war, not a tear. Then I get injured, 4 months in ICU, not a tear. And I'm wondering if God still loves me. I'm sitting there with my hands above my head in pain and misery and self-pity. And this black lady walked and stopped right in front of me. She raised her hand and she said, "Hi there." I knew immediately she's from the South because that's kind of how I talk, y'all. And the plural of a y'all is all y'all, in case you didn't know that. I want you to get your lesson. Papaw means mighty man of war, holy man of God. This is Southern speak, just helping you out a little in Colorado. Part of this used to be Texas, you know. Forget it. I won't go down that road. I'll never forget what she did. I didn't give her time of day. I looked right through her like she wasn't even there. I was so lost in the pain and misery and self-pity and despair. She walked right on by me, but her hands were pink. The black pigment of her skin was second-degree burn, and her hands turned pink. Now, that pigment would come back, and her hands would return to their normal color. But now she had two pink hands from trying to put a fire out somewhere with her hands. She went past me. Then, to me not knowing, she did an about face. She comes up behind me and attacked me from the rear. She took her pink hand that was black before it got burned, and she put it on my pink shoulder that was white before it got burned. And I found out that day we're all the same color, we're different wrapping. Wouldn't it be tragic at Christmas to have everything wrapped in the same paper? Yeah, that'd be foolish. Who's this white? Mine's different. God wrapped us different because he's a God of differences. He likes that. I'm making a point. She took that other little pink hand and plugged it into about 440 volts of Jesus Christ. One hand on me, one hand in his. She started praying for me, and next thing I know, the shovel she dug with hit water. And it came out my eyes. And for the first time in 12 months, the wandering spirit in a dry place found living water. And what the doctors are still trying to do 50-something years later, that little lady did in obedience, and God healed the spirit, the broken heart of Dave Reaver. So I'm not here because I'm good. I'm here because there's well diggers that believe more in me than I believed in myself. When you dig a well and you don't hit water, it's okay. The Bible said the rain fills the pool. So if you don't hit water, leave an impression, and the rain will fill that impression. And your presence, having been there, will never be forgotten. That little floating seed on the wings of an angel will land in that water, and it'll sprout little tiny roots, and it'll grab hold of a grain of sand. It'll hold it until it grows a little more and gets more grains of sand. Pretty soon, it'll be a little tiny twig sticking up out, and then that little twig will grow into a tall tree, and it'll shed more of those little seeds. The next thing you've got, an oasis in the middle of a desert because you made an impression in somebody's life, and you got nothing out of it. You sweat more water than you drink from that well. But your well digger made sure you had a well, and you go from strength to strength till one day we all appear before God in Zion. Psalm 84, verse 5, 6, and 7. When you get a minute, study it in the Word of God. Look up those words. Find out what they mean. Somebody in the valley of sorrow is counting on you today. And if you came today thirsty, you came to the right place. Because I'm a well digger. I try to dress better than my well digger did. But I can't button a shirt, so I have to wear shirts. Now I got a wife, and she can button my shirt for me. She can unbutton my shirt for me too. I love you, Beth. And this is only our second or third time to have a church service together. And I'm very happy because she has to go back. She's selling her home. And if you think of us this Christmas, pray for us. Because God's got a plan for our lives. He didn't put two broken people together to sit around feeling sorry for ourselves. He put us together to bring hope and water to a world of people in the U-2 pilot community, in the Air Force, in the military, all over the world, and in churches just like First Baptist in Westgate. Although there's none quite like you, you're a standalone. In sign language, that means I love you, but my thumb got blown off. I speak sign language with a lisp. I love you. And I want to say to you, First Baptist, thanks for the support you've given. Eric, thank you, buddy, for believing in me. Thank all of you for keeping a heart for our warriors like you do. And Rusty and Tish were here last Sunday. And Rusty and Tish are our gift from God to the Westcliff community and Custer County and Fremont and all the state and the nation, because they have hosted already warriors from all over the country and around the world that come to us. Westcliff, you put us on the map. Thank you. I love you with all my heart. I have a little short video. You got 3 minutes and 40 seconds? You want to see it? It'll show you where I'm a well digger. It's a video, shows the ranch in Colorado, the ranch in Texas. That's a duplicate, it's a duplicate of the gate, but we use the local rock in each. The stones at the ranch out here on 271, those stones came off that property. And the vertical logs of the lodge came off that property. We had a lot of beetle kill, and we said, we're not going to let those logs go to waste. And we use them. I mean, there's some of them as tall as that back of this church. They're beautiful. They hold up part of that lodge. You'll see the ranch in Texas with its local rock. You'll also see the Chris Kyle Memorial Gym in its origin.